Welcome to the Negotiations Ninja podcast, where we develop and deliver the most engaging negotiation content and training in the world. We host negotiation experts, business people, and entrepreneurs, and discuss what works, what doesn't work, and how we can improve our negotiation skills. Hey everyone, you've got Mark here from the Negotiations Ninja podcast. Today we have Stu Hynek on the show. He's an editorial cartoonist for the Wall Street Journal, and you're thinking to yourself, why do you have a cartoonist on the Negotiations Ninja podcast? Well, I will tell you. He wrote a fantastic book called How to Get a Meeting with Anyone. And in that book, he talks about contact marketing, or what he calls contact marketing. And it's really a great way to stop competing with the volume of people that are calling on your prospects while you're calling on them. If you're a salesperson, you already know what it's like to compete with other salespeople in all the different reach channels. You know, whether or not you're trying to reach out in email, whether or not you're trying to reach out in social or phone or whatever it might be, you're competing with a stack of people that are also trying to reach the same prospects. And so what Stu proposes is really kind of a blue ocean strategy where he's saying, look, make the contact, that's great, but then stop competing, find another channel. And that's what Stu is proposing with contact marketing. He is showing us that other channel to reach our prospects and leads. Fantastic conversation with him. I really, really enjoyed it. You should also check out his podcast, by the way, which is really, really good, called How to Get a Meeting with Anyone. Thank you so much for joining. Looking forward to your feedback. Hello, Stu. How are you?
Very good. Great to connect with you.
Yeah, I'm so glad that you're on the show, man. I think it's going to be really fun. It's not often that I get to chat with a very well-known cartoonist, so I think this will be a ton of fun for a lot of different reasons.
Cool, and I don't get to talk to them very often either.
Well, before we get started, I'd love it if you could share with the listeners what you're doing and sort of what was the reason behind writing your fantastic book.
Oh, man, thank you. So, as you mentioned, I'm a cartoonist, and cartooning and mischief, I think, have always played a role in my life and certainly in my career. And so, when I first started out, I wanted to create direct mail campaigns for magazine publishers. At the time, they were the biggest users of and the most sophisticated users of direct response. And so I wanted to create mail campaigns that incorporated cartoons and personalization. So I did that, and I got my first two assignments for Rolling Stone and Bon Appetit. Both of those beat their controls, which meant that that both of my test campaigns that I created for them beat the absolute best thing they'd ever put in the mail in that slot in their campaign. And so that's a big deal. It's wow. Right out of the box that happened. And I thought, okay, the thing I've got to do is I've got to reach out to the rest of the publishers now. And what that meant was I needed to reach about two dozen VPs and directors of circulation and consumer marketing. And, you know, these are not going to be easy. I knew that they wouldn't be easy people to reach, but I shrugged it off. I thought, okay, I'm going to do something special for them. I'm going to put together a little campaign. I didn't know what to call it, so I called it a contact campaign. And that little campaign, you know, to 24 people, it actually, I mean, I always ask people when I'm telling the story, what do you think we got for a response? And I don't know if you might want to answer that or not. I don't know.
But, I don't know. Let's shot in the dark. 15%.
I mean, 15% would be incredible if it was a direct mail campaign, right?
Yeah.
Because direct mail used to tell us that if you get a 1% response, you're doing really well. Although there's really no such number, but in 15% is a great guess, but it was actually 100%.
Wow.
100%. So this campaign really pulled off a little miracle, because not only did I get through to all of those VPs and directors of circulation and consumer marketing, but all of them agreed to meet, and all of them became clients.
Wow.
So that was 100% response, 100% conversion, and it launched my business and was worth millions of dollars to me. And it cost me, this campaign cost me about $100 to put together and run. And so that was my first introduction to what I ended up later calling contact marketing. And you know, the thing is, I've known for a long time, because that started at the very beginning of my career, that I had a secret weapon that I could use to break through to just about anyone. But things got really interesting when I got interested about, or just started becoming exposed to what everyone else is doing to break through and get important meetings. And that eventually led to writing the book that I think you're referring to, the one that's been out for a couple of years, called How to Get a Meeting with Anyone.
That's right.
Yeah, and I have a new one coming out. It's a companion to that, called Get the Meeting. It's coming out in October.
Great. Well, when I was looking through the book, I found it fascinating to think of like what most salespeople would do to get a meeting with someone important, to get potential business, and the prospecting, cold calling, hours on the phone sort of deal. And what you're proposing is something radically different. So, and you call it contact marketing. What is contact marketing?
Yeah, I mean, I guess the thing you're just describing, where people are, let's say, dialing and dialing and dialing all day long. They're playing a numbers game. They're really sort of doing a scattershot approach. I think the same thing is happening in social selling largely, but and I'm not the best practitioner in the world of social selling, so I couldn't say for sure. But there's a lot of scattershot selling going on, or at least approaches to important accounts and prospects. And contact marketing, by comparison, is a rifle shot. It's a sniper shot. It's saying, look, let's identify the people who can really change the scale of everything. Who are the dream clients that we want to, or really, who are the, well, I could say dream clients, but because it could also be partners. They could open up sales channels that you wouldn't be able to duplicate. It could be all sorts of other kinds of contacts as well. But who are the people who if I could get through to them and we created some sort of a relationship and an ongoing deal together, would change the scale of either my career or my business. And then we turn around and we use these micro-focused campaigns, you know, which use some sort of clever, audacious means. That sort of seems to be the common thread through all of these, is that somehow, somewhere, it's really pretty audacious and clever. And so we use some sort of clever means to reach out to these people who, again, who can change everything. And we do it in a way that gets through, you know, well, I just mentioned 100% response rate earlier. It's not that everyone gets 100% response rate. I've only seen them a few times, but we get really high response rates compared to any other form of marketing. So that's essentially what it is.
Amazing. And so walk me through, for instance, like what was that $100 campaign that got you that 100% response rate?
Well, you know, I mean, that was a pretty simple one. I created an 8x10 print of a cartoon. The cartoon was personalized. In other words, the caption was written so that there were data insertion points for first and last name. And I sent that print with a letter that said, this is the device I just used to beat the controls for Rolling Stone and Bon Appetit, and I think we should put these to the test for your title. So it was essentially that. It was a really pretty simple thing.
Wow.
And from that, I followed up and we the rest is history.
Incredible. And when we talk about contact marketing and we're trying to talk about that targeted approach, if we're trying to elicit a higher response rate, and you really speak to like the numbers game of sales, right? We're doing that sort of scattershot approach. If we're trying to be more targeted and get a higher response rate, what are some of the factors that are really important when we think about that really focused targeted approach?
Well, there are several of them. One of them is, if you're calling, if you're doing a lot of calls or sending emails, you are operating in a very, very crowded channel. So that's not really the smartest thing to do. Right? I mean, it doesn't really make a lot of sense.
Right.
But another really is that what my goal in creating contact campaigns, and I create a lot of them for clients. And in fact, we usually use cartoons to do it. So I'll just sort of that use that as an example. When we're doing this for a client, we produce or use what I call big boards. So these are 18 by 24 inch, quarter inch thick foam core boards with a cartoon about the recipient on the front and on the back, or let's say on one side, and on the other side is branding and messaging from the sender to the recipient, explaining who they are, why they'd like to meet, and what the next steps are. And that shows up in this custom corrugated brown cardboard packaging that has cartoon art all over it. It looks like this thing that's showing up from a cartoon art gallery, which is pretty cool. I mean, that gets a lot of attention. And when someone gets that and opens it, they're going to be saying, well, wow, that's, I mean, if it's on target, it has to be on target. It has to be done very carefully. But if it is, they're going to be saying, that's really cool. I love the way this person thinks. I got to meet. I mean, like, you know, if you receive something from someone, you're saying, wow, I love the way this person thinks. I think the next thing out of your mouth is, I want to meet this person.
Right.
So that's what we do. There's also an interesting preamble to this, because executive assistants are certainly part of the equation, certainly when you're reaching out to the C-suite. And you don't always have to reach out to the C-suite. That's not always necessary. But when you are, you're going to meet up with executive assistants. And a lot of salespeople will ask questions like, well, how do I circumvent they'll call them admins and so on, but how do I circumvent the admin? And I'm always telling them, you don't want to do that at all. That the admin is, or the executive assistant is someone that you want to make an ally. And you can do that pretty quickly. And again, as in the example of the cartoon piece that we send out, if I'm sending it myself, I'm calling the assistant first. And I'm saying, hi, my name is Stu Hynek. I'm one of the Wall Street Journal cartoonists. And I'm sending a print of one of my cartoons. It's about your boss. Well, when I'm done with that, I don't know what that is, about 18 words, the executive assistant is saying, wow, really? Okay. So, you know, the conversation continues. May I send you an email? I mean, I want it to be a surprise to your boss, but not to you. So would you mind if I send all this just an email so you have my details? No, gosh, here's my email address. And so there are several touches actually that happen with the executive assistant before the piece even arrives. But the point is that by the time that arrives, the executive assistant is an ally. I mean, of course, they work for their boss. They don't work for me, but they're an ally. They want me to get through, or they want my clients to get through. And the target executive, him or herself, is already saying, when they get the piece anyway, they're saying, wow, you know, I love the way this person thinks. This is great. I love this. This is cool. And so when you're doing that, when you do that with contact marketing, when you do that just in outreach, that's very different from incessant phone calls or incessant voicemails or incessant emails. It's just not, you know, there shouldn't be a cadence, actually. There should be this one approach that just wows them and causes the executive assistant to say, this is someone who really does need to get through to my boss.
Yeah, brilliant. I love it. And I mean, email, as you said, and phone calls, as you said, is so crowded. There's so many people doing it. By picking a channel that not many people are doing, or virtually no one is doing, you have the ability to really rack up your response rates, because those people that are getting those emails and those phone calls are so burdened by the volume that they're receiving that when they get something via mail and it's personalized and it's direct and it's targeted, they're automatically going to start thinking positive things about you, because you've made it personalized and direct and targeted, and you're not fighting the noise in that email and phone channel.
Yeah, it sets you apart completely, and that's a big part of your mission at that point. You executive assistants, also insert them into the process still. You know, a lot of people think of them or call them gatekeepers, and that's a part of what they do. I mean, I would say it's a small part of what they do, actually. You know, you got to think about this. When you're reaching the executive assistant to the CEO, you're really talking to someone who is a member of the C-suite almost, because they have direct, I mean, actually they report directly to the CEO, just like the rest of the C-suite does. And they're some of the sharpest people. They know everyone in the organization. They know what their bosses, the good ones anyway, they know what their bosses are up to, what their priorities are. They know what works and what doesn't for them. And really, you could really more think of them more as VPs of access or even talent scouts. They're not someone to circumvent. They're someone to engage.
What do you, you said you have several touches, several pieces of touch when you approach an executive assistant. And so that by the time the piece in the mail comes through, they're already that quote unquote ally. What are those touch points?
Well, you know, first it's that, that initial phone call, and you know, the phone call is a, it's a courtesy call to let them know that, it, that the print is coming. By the way, I'm not asking for permission. I'm not saying, may I send it? I'm just saying I'm sending it. I want to let you know about it.
Yeah.
And then the next touch point is the email, because I've said, do you mind? I mean, I don't want it to be a surprise to you, but certainly do for your boss. May I send you an email? Yep. So send, so you get their email address and send it. And of course, you're also confirming the address just to make sure you're not sending it to the wrong place. So then the email goes out. That's a touch point. Then we have these cards that we also use that we just print them out of our laser printer, but they're printed on nice stock, and they're with just a couple of desktop pieces of equipment, you can trim it really nicely and score it so that it folds down into a really beautiful card, something like what you'd buy, like what you'd buy at the store. And the cartoon, there's a cartoon, of course, from me anyway. There's a cartoon, and it's always one of my cartoons for a specific reason. I'll say it, tell you in a second. But so it has one of my cartoons on the face of the card. There's my my logo and contact details on the back where the Hallmark logo might go if you were buying a Hallmark card. And then inside there's a handwritten note. So if the cartoon is personalized to the recipient, thus the executive assistant, one of the things that's going to happen is when they open the card, they're going to see the cartoon, they'll read it, they'll, I think they'll get a chuckle out of it. When they open the card, one of the things that they're going to see a handwritten note, but they're also going to see that the cartoonist's signature, which is in my case, it's, I get to do that. I guess even if it, if that doesn't happen, it's still just such a nice touch. There's a card from someone. It's about the recipient and, or it's about the executive assistant. They'll keep it on their desk. I don't know how long, but I know that when people get big boards, they keep them in their office, perhaps the rest of their careers, certainly for years though. And I would expect that executive assistants would keep a card that has a cartoon about them either on their desk or their bulletin board for years as well. And so there's a nice, and that card just says, on the inside, it just says, dear so-and-so, thank you so much for your help on the phone. Greatly appreciated. And then I sign it. So there's another touch point. And then when the FedEx tracking information is available, I'll send an email about that as well. So they've had, what is that? I think that's four touch points before the big board ever arrives.
Wow, fascinating. And I mean, one of the things that's affected prospecting and certainly must be affecting contact marketing is social media. How does social media play into this?
Well, you know, social media is really interesting. I guess, you know, Twitter and Facebook are interesting, but certainly the big gorilla in the room now is LinkedIn. I think it is.
Yeah, I agree.
And so, and it's easy to connect with people on LinkedIn. I think it's pretty easy to connect with people. The problem is that it's a really insignificant act, because if you think about it, you know, you'll go into your LinkedIn account, you'll see, you might see, who knows, 10 or 20 invitations, and you click yes or connect. You might even reach out to some of them. Maybe it's just one or two, I don't know. But it's, I think that that act is really about as significant as driving down the freeway and waving to someone going the opposite direction. It happens really quick and it's forgotten because yeah. 19 others just went by, you know, and you're waving to them too. So I think that it's important to always to, I mean, within that sphere, of course, you always want to be providing value and not pitching. I mean, if you pitch right away, that's a good way to just be banned, not banned, but blocked.
Yeah.
But you want to be providing value, you want to get to know people, but there's just such a deluge of people that, you know, that's the way it is for us as users, but it's also the way it is for everybody else. And certainly the people that you want to be connecting with. And so if you find those, I think those are great opportunities. If you've connected with someone, to then go offline in all sorts of forms, but it could be a phone call. It could be what we're doing right now, an interview. If you have a podcast, those are great ways to create connections with people, or you can send them something. And God, you can send them all kinds of things. And as you might expect, I send them cartoons, but But I don't want to leave the impression that you have to be a cartoonist to do this. You don't. There are all kinds of ways to craft really interesting campaigns, and certainly physical things that you can send to people. And I shameless plug, I mean, I've got to say that in How to Get a Meeting with Anyone, there are 20 categories of contact marketing campaigns. And I added about the same amount again in Get the Meeting. So there are a lot of really interesting different things that you can do, different modes you can then switch to, so that you're not always connecting on LinkedIn, because it's just, there's too much noise. So I think what makes sense is to connect, but then immediately get out of the noise and go to much less crowded channels.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe you could run us through, I mean, and you gave an example, you said, hey, you know, it doesn't have to be cartoons, obviously that's your thing, but like run us through a couple of the campaigns that you have in your book. Like what would someone actually do to be creative and stand out? Calling all multitasking negotiators, I am speaking to you, so listen up. Whether you're listening on your commute or the Peloton or anywhere in between, this is important. Are you looking for ways to increase your procurement productivity and save thousands of dollars? Scout RFP helps to simplify and automate the sourcing process so you can get more done faster. You need to check out Scout RFP at scoutrfp.com/negotiation. I'm going to repeat that. That's scoutrfp.com/negotiation. Stop digging through spreadsheets, emails, and documents for contracts and project information. You are wasting your time and your valuable resources. You need a better tool, and that's Scout. Over 190 global brands like Adobe, Biogen, EasyJet, Salesforce, and Zappos trust Scout RFP's automated sourcing and supplier engagement platform. Scout RFP's platform is super easy to use, and most organizations can get up and running in just hours. You need to see for yourself at scoutrfp.com/negotiation. I know Scout. I've used Scout. I trust these guys. Check it out at scoutrfp.com/negotiation. And now back to your show.
Yeah, a couple examples. There's one, a few of my favorites actually. So there's one that was done by Dan Waldschmidt, who is the author of the Edgy Conversations blog. I think that's one of the best traffic sales blogs on the net at this point. So, but the thing is, what he does for a living is he's a turnaround specialist. So he's looking for disadvantaged companies, but they're in trouble because they're not meeting their objectives. And so what he does is he'll scan the business news every day looking for stories of missed earnings estimates. And when he finds one, he has this beautiful sword made up by the prop maker who made the swords for the movie Gladiator. And that's what he does. He makes props for movies. So these are really beautiful swords, and they're engraved with the CEO's name and an inscription: if you're not all in, you're not in at all. And that gets put in this beautiful wooden box with a handwritten note. That's really important. Handwritten notes seem to show up a lot in the most successful campaigns. So there's a handwritten note from Dan to the CEO saying, "Dear so-and-so, I get it. Business is war. And I noticed you lost a battle recently. If you ever need a few extra hands in battle, we've got your back." And it's just signed Dan and his phone number and email address.
Wow.
So what's interesting about that is you might say, well, there's no branding in there at all. Actually, there's no traditional branding, but there's huge branding value in all of that. Because when the CEO gets the sword, it's not something they expected. They're pretty lonely people at that point, for one thing.
Yeah.
I mean, they're under siege, actually. Maybe they're not lonely, but they're under siege. And then in comes this beautiful piece. It's, you know, you couldn't really call it a gift because nobody's saying, I need a sword now. You know?
Yeah, exactly.
I want a sword to hang on my wall. But what it really is a beautiful visual metaphor for the value that Dan proposes to bring. He's going to fight for you. And that sword is a is a visual representation of what he's about, what he would like to do for you, certainly is offering to do for you. And so, well, you know, I could ask you again what you might think he gets as a response, right? And now, by now, I know it's a trick question. So you might.
Yeah, so he's getting 100%, right? Exactly. He's got to be getting 100%.
He gets 100%.
Like, I would, there's no way anyone's going to ignore a sword in a box.
Yeah. Now, you know, I got to tell you, what's really interesting about contact marketing is this. I described a campaign that I spent $100 on that launched my business.
Yeah.
Now, Dan spends a lot more per piece. He spends $1,000 per piece.
Yeah.
But he's getting through all the time. And but that doesn't mean he sells all the time. But look, the point really then is when he does sell an engagement for turnaround services, it's worth $1 million and up to him. So $1,000 to break through and break through in a way that, you know, there again, I'm sure the CEO is saying, man, I love the way this guy thinks. And that's really important because he's proposing to help this CEO turn the company around. He better like how Dan thinks.
Yeah.
Or nothing's going to happen. And so you know, the metrics of contact marketing are really just, they're really rather bizarre because we're seeing response rates that go as high as 100%. And I'm going to tell you another story here in a second I'll reveal what the record percentage is for ROI so far on a contact campaign. But I'll just say that generally we see tens and hundreds of thousands of percent ROI to these campaigns. It's really crazy metrics. So Dan is spending $1,000 every time he reaches out to a CEO, but he's using a trigger. I mean, there's a trigger event. They just announced the missed earnings estimate.
Right.
It's very timely, and it's just a beautiful representation, a visual representation of the value he proposes to bring. Now, there's another story that I included in the new book that I think is really pretty cool. This one is the record for ROI. And it involves a little startup called, they were called Aurabrush, and they had a product called Aurabrush, which is a tongue scraping device. And so for about a year, they were selling the Aurabrush online using YouTube videos, and they were very effective at it. These were really good digital marketers. Well, at some point they said, okay, that's great, but we really want to break into brick and mortar retail. And of course, that means we really want to break into Walmart. And that really means not just one or two stores, but all 6,800 stores. And so they went through the regular process of applying to become a vendor, which I think we probably all would expect is kind of a dead end.
Yeah. You know?
And it certainly was for them. And so... What they found was that it was just taking too long. Some of the younger guys in the group decided they were going to do something about it, unbeknownst to the CEO. And what they did was they put together a little Facebook ad, you know, the ones that are on that right rail in Facebook.
Yeah.
Really tiny ad. And it showed their spokesman from the YouTube videos holding an Aurabrush up. And the headline was, Walmart employees have bad breath. And then the rest of it was, but they won't if they... The problem will be solved if you carry the Aurabrush on your shelves, something along those lines. what they did is they targeted
Cheeky.
It very carefully, right? They targeted it to the precise zip code of the Bentonville, Arkansas headquarters of Walmart, and then they specified college education and a certain let's say 35 to 45 age range. And what they were trying to do was target the buyer for dental products at Walmart.
Hilarious.
And that's what they want to do. Now, so here's what happened though, because this is what's really amazing. Walmart, it was up for 48 hours, then Walmart got in touch. But it was their communications department, not purchasing. And they said, my God, are you the guys behind this ad? Yeah, we are. Would you take that down immediately, please? Sure, of course we'll do that. Was that run nationally? No. Oh, really? It wasn't run nationally. No, we just targeted you guys. Really? So they got into this conversation about how they were able to target. This was, you know, when a conversation like that would make sense, because right now I think everyone knows you can target on Facebook ads, but they didn't know about it yet. So they were really pretty fascinated. So you're saying you reached just us. Yep. just you guys. Well, that's really fascinating. And then before they knew it, they had been connected with the buyer for dental products. And the buyer said, I love what you're doing. Can you support an order for 735,000 units? And they said, of course. That was $1.5 million order.
Wow.
You know, against the previous year's $1 million worth of business. So it was $1.5 million order. It was, in fact, a new rollout to at least, you know, an initial rollout to their 6,800 stores. And I asked the CEO, his name is Jeff Davis. I asked him, well, okay, so if you're a startup and you break through to Walmart and now suddenly they've ordered enough to stock all 6,800 stores pretty nicely. I mean, that's a pretty good order. What did that do to the value of the company? And he said, well, good question, because we think that the value went up somewhere between 10 and 20 times.
Whoa.
And he said, but let's be conservative. If it went up 10 times and the value was just twice what our revenue was the first year, therefore it was $2 million valuation going in, and it multiplied it by 10, then that means that they went from a $2 million company to a $20 million company overnight from this one order, but really from this one $28 ad. That's all it cost them to run this. So they've won so far they're the champs. That is a 69,500,000% ROI.
Ah, that is obscene.
Those are pretty wild examples, but you know, people have used, well, we're doing a podcast, and I'm sure you've noticed that podcasts are a great way to connect with people.
Oh yeah.
If you've wanted to think of it this way, it is a contact campaign. That's a brilliant contact campaign. You don't always have to spend a lot of money. And I think maybe I should just wrap up with one more story, if that's okay, if you have time.
Yeah, please do.
So I, you know, when I go out to speak, one of the things that I really enjoy, I mean, out in person, one of the things I really enjoy is I'll tell the audience, look, before we start, I've got some great stories to tell you and some amazing metrics and so forth. It's a really fascinating story behind all this. The thing that I know is that, you know, that contact marketing is something that people have been doing for a very long time. They just do it naturally. I mean, it didn't even have a name until I put How to Get a Meeting with Anyone out. There was no name for what we've been doing. But the thing is, in this audience, I'm sure there are plenty of people here who have some way of breaking through to people that's just incredibly, it could be really simple or ornate, I don't know, complicated, whatever, but it breaks you through all the time. I'll bet you there are several people in the audience right here who have something like that. So I'm wondering, would anyone want to share a story like that? So this one guy raised his hand and he said, well, you're going to think this is kind of silly, but I said, no, let's go. I mean, they're not silly. So he said, okay, well, I'm in commercial real estate, and there was this one investor that I really wanted to get as a client, did a lot of business in commercial real estate. So I wanted to connect with him. And he said he tried everything he could think of, and he was dropping by, he was calling, sending emails, letters, et cetera. He was doing everything he could think of, and nothing was working. So one day he realized, well, this guy's birthday's coming up. So on that day, he went to the bakery and got a cupcake and had them put a birthday candle in it, put it in a nice bakery box, and he brought it over to the prospect's office. And the receptionist knew who he was, knew that she should block him again. I guess she'd blocked him several times before, and she was all ready to do that. And he said, but Rick is the fellow's name. He said, look, I'm not here to do anything other than just drop this off. I know it's Bob's birthday. And he hands her the box, and she opens it up, and everything changed. It was a flip moment. Everything changed, and she said, oh my gosh, that's so nice. Hold on a second. She walks back with the box into the back office and then comes out with Bob. And Bob says, hey, Rick, I'm so sorry I've been so hard to reach. Come on back and let's talk. And so they talked, and, well, Rick, tell me what you do. And Rick told him, and, well, Rick walked out of there that morning with a $200,000 deal.
So amazing.
That came from a $4 cupcake.
Incredible.
So it doesn't have to be, you know, it doesn't have to be a cartoon. It doesn't have to be actually even particularly clever. It just needs to be, I suppose, thoughtful, maybe audacious. I mean, I'm thinking about what a cupcake is. It's thoughtful and maybe a little audacious to do that and bring it in. Although not really a big, not a terribly big risk. You're just dropping something off for someone's birthday. I think it's a pretty cool thing. And there, it turns out there are just all these examples that have actually, it seems like they've gone back through time. In fact, I actually found an example of a campaign that was created by Leonardo da Vinci for one of the Medici family members to help them meet the Count of Milan. So it's gone back so far, that far. It's probably gone back further than that because, you know, a lot of this is just the action of giving a gift to say, hey, and by the way, I'd like to meet.
Yeah. Incredible. Well, I'm truly fascinated by this because I think prospecting is important. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying, you know, to the salespeople listening, I'm not saying don't prospect, but you've got to have something that separates you. You've got to have something that, that helps you to operate in an area that's not necessarily as crowded as the other areas. So I think as sort of like a complementary approach to your prospecting, something that you really need to be considering is contact marketing. I mean, I think the concept is brilliant, but it takes effort and it takes thought and it takes some creativity to be able to do that. Not a ton, apparently, but it definitely takes that creativity. And I think if you're listening to this and you're thinking, man, where do I get started? I highly recommend that you pick up a copy of Stu's book. It is fantastic. And Stu, thank you so much for being on the show, man. It really, really enlightening. I really enjoyed it.
Thanks so much. And I want to remind the audience too, that there's a new one coming out, lots of new case studies and a new model, actually sort of an expanded model of contact marketing and a new campaign form called Pocket Campaigns that I think should replace business cards immediately.
And cool.
So that's coming out in October, Get the Meeting, and How to Get a Meeting with Anyone is out right now. And I agree with you. I know that it will change lives because that's what it's been doing.
Amazing. Well, again, man, thank you so much for being on. Had a great time. For the listeners, just so that you know, I'm going to link out to all of Stu's stuff online. Stu, before you go, if people want to follow you online, how do they do that?
Well, I think the best way to do it is to connect with me on LinkedIn. And we'll wave to each other heading down the freeway the opposite direction. But that's the easiest way to connect with me.
Awesome. Thank you again, man. Have a great day.
Thank you so much.
Hey, friends. Thanks so much for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed it, please share it with friends and colleagues so that they can benefit from it as well. If you find Negotiations Ninja Podcast worthy, please go onto iTunes and give us a cool rating with a nice review. We certainly appreciate every single one that we get because it helps us to understand who is listening, how they're listening, and what it is they like. If there's something that you would like me to discuss around negotiation, influence, or persuasion, give me a shout. You know how to reach me on social media, or you can get me on my website, which is www.negotiations.ninja.